Hey everyone, this is Frosty from the website Collider.com, and this is our interview with Deepa Mehta, the writer and director of the film Water. Hope you enjoy it.
I just have to ask, after two successful movies, Fire and Earth, what made you want to continue this and continue it with this movie?
The story for Water, in fact, was the one that I had the first, even before Fire and Earth. So it felt very natural that after I finished Fire and I finished Earth, that I would go to Water and use the story which I thought about before Fire and Earth.
So after all the problems that happened with this movie, did you ever think that it was going to get made?
I didn't think for a second that it would not get made. I always knew it would get made. The question was when. And for that, there's a particular reason, because when we were, very violently shut down in Varanasi in the year 2000, what happened was I had an opportunity to make the film, to mount it again in two different provinces in India. And I went to them, and I went, recce'd and looked at them, and then I thought, wait a minute. What was wrong was that I was so angry by what had happened to us, and the shutdown, the death threats, the effigies being burned, the sets being destroyed, that I thought if I imposed my anger on the script, which is essentially very fragile, I would really distort it, because it would be my personal baggage that I was imposing on something that did not need that baggage. So I promised myself that I would not make Water till I stopped being angry, and it took 4 years for that anger to dissipate. And once it did, it took 2 months to get it together, and we were shooting in Sri Lanka.
And how long did it take you to make the offer that Lisa could not refuse to be involved in the movie?
Well, the script hadn't changed at all since the inception. And once I looked at the script, but I had changed as a person, I guess, and the way I looked as a director at certain characters. When I read it, I thought, my God, I think Lisa would be wonderful for the role of Kalyani. So I think it was about a month into before, that we sent it to her. And she responded back very soon. It was obviously under a false name. I think we called it River Moon or something absurd. I said, let's think of the most kitschy title. And we thought of River Moon, so...
I wanted to know if you could tell us a little bit about your history with film, with what first made you fall in love with becoming a filmmaker, and maybe one of the first films you saw that really impacted you.
I was sort of lucky. My father was a film distributor and an exhibitor in India, so I grew up with films, and I think I saw my first film at the age of six, and it was a Hindi commercial film called Mamta. And I remember, it was very interesting because I remember crying a lot. It was really sort of a sob story. But I didn't understand what something that I couldn't touch or even smell or feel. How did that evoke that emotion in me? And my dad took me to the projection room and explained a little bit. And I remember touching celluloid and then taking me to the screen. And it was white cloth. And then saying that the person who makes all this happen is a person called a director. And I said, I want to be one too. And so it was a love affair from a very young age. But by the time I finished school, when I was 17, I was sort of saturated with film. Because coming out of my ears, in our house, Friday night was a very tense time, because that was when a film was going to be released. Monday mornings were very tense, because that's when the box office grosses used to come out. And by the age of 17, I said, I don't have anything to do with this. It's too insecure a life. I want to become an academic. So I studied philosophy. And when I was planning to do my thesis, when I met a young man who ran a small company in Delhi called Cinema Workshop. And they made documentaries for the government of India. And he said, while you're making up your mind whether you should do your thesis on Hinduism or not, why don't you come and help us out? So, I went there, and and learned how to do sound, learned to edit, learned to do camera work, learned how to construct 2-minute scripts, and fell in love with cinema in a totally different way, and forgot about my thesis and did my first documentary.
I wanted to ask, the movie touched me in several levels. Talking to folks before you walked in, as a student of Gandhi, on that level, but more importantly, as a father of 2 daughters.
Mm-hmm.
What do you suppose, or what can this film teach folks here in the States? What's the message that you hope that audiences will get from the film?
For me, I guess everybody takes different things, and you're right. For me, what's the nucleus of the film is the importance of compassion, the importance of tolerance in an increasingly intolerant world. And Buñuel said this, that when a film is very specific, is the very minute it starts getting universal. So Water is very specific. It's set in 1938. It's about a house of widows, but the emotions that it deals with are universal. And I think that we have a way of marginalizing, as human beings all over the world, something that we are not familiar with. And that makes us intolerant. And that really gives rise to violence. And for me, the importance of Water is to get to know the other. And that's important.
Has anyone in India come to you about a reaction yet? And, what is that, or what's going to happen when it does go over there?
Water's been screened in India many times. It was the opening film for one of our most important film festivals called the Kerala Film Festivals, and it was an outdoor screening where more than 5,000 people came to see it. And the reaction was overwhelmingly positive. I mean, I'm sure there were people who hated it, but they wouldn't come and say that to me at the end and say, hated your film. But it was so positive. But for me, what was very important and ironic in many ways was a member of the BJP, which was the government that actually was responsible for shutting down Water 5 years ago, came to me at the end and he said, I want to apologize to you for what our government did, because the film doesn't deserve that. That was lovely. And it's been shown in private screenings. It was shown at the Mumbai Film Festival, and not without one incident. And it's going to be released, I think, sometime in May. In July, I heard, in India. As to what the reaction is going to be once it's out, who knows? I can just cross my fingers and hope that things go well. But you never know. That's the incredible thing about extremist groups. You don't know when they're going to pop up and what they're going to do.
Besides Lisa, how was the other casting gone about it? How did you find the little girl?
The little girl I found in Sri Lanka. I looked at many young girls in Mumbai, in India, all the way. I must have auditioned about 82, I think, young girls, or seen tapes of their work, and I was quite dispirited because all the young girls I met or saw are extremely heavily influenced by Bollywood. So their performances, which is fine for Bollywood, are extremely melodramatic and over the top. And to undo that with a child really requires a lot of work. And so I decided that I didn't want be spending my time undoing that, the thing that kids imbibe, whether they see Bollywood or see popular cinema on television. And so I decided when we went to Sri Lanka that I put out notices all over the local schools, and Sarala is one of the kids who responded to that. And I looked at her, and you know instinctively as a director that, my God, I said, oh, I found Julia. She was so lovely. And I started talking to her, and I think, 5-10 seconds into my monologue, I realized that she didn't speak a word, didn't understand a word of what I was saying, because obviously she doesn't you know, doesn't know English. She knows Sinhalese. She doesn't know Hindi. But I asked her, I said, you know, but I didn't want to let her go because she felt so right. So I said, I mean, to an interpreter, that supposing your father leaves you in a place that you don't want to be left at, what would you do? And Sarala jumped off her chair, got hold of the interpreter's leg, started crying and saying in Sinhalese, don't leave me here. And I said, I'll work it out. You know, this is Julia. And we did. We had 3 weeks of rehearsals. And we went through the script with a fine-tooth comb. She learned all her lines phonetically. And that's amazing. She's a natural talent. She'd never been in front of a camera, ever. And she told me very proudly that she was in her school play, though. And I said, what did you do? And she said, I was a turnip. You know, it was just lovely.
Yeah. She was wonderful. She was definitely wonderful. Can you tell us how things have changed, circumstances have changed or not changed for widows in India?
Well, a lot of, you know, they are. It has to be looked in the context when you think of a population of more than 1 billion people. Apparently, there are about 11 million or so. Nobody really knows. Widows who continue to live under similar conditions, whether they live in ashrams or they live at home, the conditions are similar, where they are actually inauspicious. So to live your life being told you're inauspicious, I think, is depriving a human being of dignity, which is extremely important for people to survive and live. And that's, for me, is what's most horrifying about that. But in the last few years, you know, you'll never find a child widow anymore. At all, because child marriages are completely outlawed in the ashrams. Even the younger widows who come there now don't necessarily shave their heads. And if they have children, they actually bring them to the ashrams. And the other thing that's extremely encouraging is the amount of good work that's being done by activists and NGOs with widows, trying to make them economically independent. Because as we all know, until you're economically independent, you don't have any choices. And the point is to give them choices. So I'm really pleased about that.
That's good. That's good to hear. Yeah.
Thank you. We need to wrap up.
Okay. One more.
Okay.
I was just going to ask about your writing process.
You know, I saw a widow. I mean, we'll talk about water. I saw a widow about 11 years ago for the first time. I mean, growing up in India, I've heard about them. But seeing this aspect of widows and ashrams was something that I'd only seen 11 years ago, where the heads are shaven and the level life of general despair and apathy. And the first widow that I saw in Varanasi is actually was about 78 years old. She was wearing a piece of cloth, one piece of white cloth, and her hair was shaven. But that image was the one that started the story. So for me, it's either an image or perhaps a sentence that I read that starts a story. Once I have the story, I do a treatment and I write the story and I have a theme and then I make up the story. For water, it was imperative that for me that I do it from the protagonist's point of view, and the protagonist had to be a young girl, because children are non-judgmental. Children don't have preconceptions. They don't have the baggage that adults have, and they have a natural curiosity. So to explore that whole world from eyes that hadn't been jaded was important. Once Sarala came into the picture, the story evolved.
May I ask how long it took you to write it?
And I'm sorry, really, the rap's running late.
I write really fast. It took me 2 months to write the script.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you all.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.